Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Later in the program, the winners of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's government-wide cyber competition. But first, it's my pleasure to welcome to the program a good friend, Jason Salata. He is a retired United States Navy captain and former spokesman of the U.S. Special Operations Command. He is now one of the group at Provision Advisors that's providing public affairs support for SOF Week, the biggest gathering of special operators anywhere in the world. Jason, it's always a pleasure having you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always love to be here, Vago, and greetings from a balmy Tampa, Florida.
Well, it's good to have you in a break in the action. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsors. The Defense and Aerospace Report and its family of publications is brought to you by HII, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, GE Aerospace, Bell, Leonardo DRS, American Rheinmetall, and TE Connectivity. Jason, walk us through, right? I mean, SOF Week is a terrific opportunity to hear messaging from the U.S. Special Operations community. You were there on the job, both as, you know, the focus still was on counterterror operations as we were transitioning to get up on step on great power competition, where soft forces have always played a very important role. Walk us through the messages the audience was hearing from senior leaders across the defense and special operations enterprise.
SOF Week has a pretty rich history here in Tampa, and with the U.S. Special Operations Command kind of growing it over time to be the, you know, pinnacle event for the year for SOF. This year is an international year, so the focus is on international SOF. Yesterday, when General Brian Fenton, the commander of USSOCOM, did his keynote address to everyone, it was very clear. This is a decisive decade. Of course, he called out all the players that are making it a decisive decade in the defense world: China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, all with their unique problem sets that they give not only the special operations community, but our defense department across the board and across the globe with our international partners well at hand. General Fenton's main point was that strategic competition is in SOF's DNA. So SOF everywhere were grown out of strategic competition. And in this case, he calls today a SOF renaissance, which is, I think, a really appropriate way to look at it. But that was his core message yesterday.
And what were some of the messages, right? I mean, whenever there's International Week, you always have a strong representation from foreign leaders that are also messaging, right? I mean, almost every country uses their soft forces. Some, you know, have a very important domestic security, right? I mean, they don't have posse comitatus problems. But we have a tendency of learning from our allies and partners, whether they're in Asia, Europe, or right, Middle East. Israeli special operators have been prominent in our thinking as Brits and others. What were some of the messages you heard from international leaders about how they're managing the community? And right, nobody's got a monopoly on good ideas.
To give you a sense, I mean, there's over 100 countries have sent senior leaders from their special operations to this event. Right now, the King of Jordan addressed the entire group here. So he's here to observe the international capabilities demonstration that'll happen later today. And I'd love to talk a little more about that and how that's changed over time. But the core message from our international partners is the same. I mean, everyone is seeing this renaissance. And I love that word because it's a return to something that we were very familiar with coming out of World War II and the Cold War, is this international competition. And the fact that you have to be able to sustain your special operations forces to be able to kind of keep that contact layer, it's not necessarily up front and is not full scale conflict, but it's operations that you can do to continue to keep the balance of power in an indirect way. And I feel like that's what a lot of nations are seeing is ripe for their special operations community. That's why they're here. That's why they're investing in SOF. That's why they're coming and looking at the latest technology here in Tampa this week. And it's where where the every nation, I think, with a special operations component is headed. Over.
I remember attending SOFEX in Amman, Jordan, which was a terrific event, and saw King Abdullah's passion for the community and the role that it plays in Jordanian security. And I know that there's a great exercise, you know, demo that's done with helicopters and SWIC boats and the whole thing. And the Jordanians really used to do a pretty impressive show as well each year at SOFEX. So I know that that's always kind of a fun event. You talked about some of that messaging, and I want to get to the technology in a second. But do you want to expand a little bit on that broader sort of messaging front before we go sort of to the interesting technology you guys are seeing down there?
Bago, the capabilities demonstration, as you mentioned, you've been involved with coming down here for years. The capabilities demonstration that gets put on at the International Soft Week, or every other year here in Tampa, has always followed kind of a counterterrorism hostage rescue scenario, right? The mayor would get kidnapped, they'd bring a bunch of special operations people in downtown Tampa, and they would rescue him in front of cameras and thousands of people. That's changed this year. I mean, this year, the capabilities demonstration is way more about SOF's ability to integrate with regular forces. I mean, there's F-35s involved in it. There's a counter UAS technology gets demonstrated against a swarm of drones. I mean, it's really a much more robust execution. It still has your little birds and special, you know, naval special warfare SEALs climbing up on boats and stuff, but it is really way more about meeting current threats and, you know, this idea of dominance in the spectrum domain, but also dominance in the subsurface, surface and air domain, all done by SOF and International SOF. 10 countries are participating alongside the U.S. in this demonstration this year.
The United States is always working with all of its allies and partners to be able to have that kind of seamless coordination, build trust, you know, well before it's needed. And it's interesting how much deeper that is really than often in other fields in special operations. One more question before we get to the technology piece of this, Jason, is, you know, there was a sense. Right. I mean, resourcing is a challenge, right? We're now a flat budget environment and inflation pressures are going. And the SOF community did have a little bit of a sense that, you know, they're no longer front and center anymore, right? That we will be forgotten and not going to get the investment we need for the next transition we need to make. What's sort of the sense from the community about whether or not they're getting that support from senior levels of the department, whether they're getting the budget support? You know, is there a sense that folks more broadly than the community recognizes them as important as they actually are, whether we're in the Indo-Pacific or anywhere else on the planet?
Well, Bago, I think you're well aware that SOF in certain service budgets has taken a bit of a hit of late budget-wise. And I think that's, what you know, the common view, I think, held by a lot of people here in that are close to SOF are that's something that's happening across the board to all components. SOF always feels it more acutely because they feel that they want it, you know, they've grown and they've, over the last several years, they've felt that they had the appropriate strength. And they also know that you can't, you know, it takes decades to grow a soft operator. And they want to know that if you start cutting soft operators in the manpower side, you can't just surge that if you need them. And I think that soft truth, if you will, that you can't mass produce soft, you can't do it on a shoestring, you can't do it on a short timeline, that is resonating with lawmakers. And so I feel like, there are a lot of lawmakers out there that have real strong opinions when it comes to SOF's value. And I believe that those people will keep a hard line when it comes to deeper budget cuts and SOF's future. So again, General Fenton has a great pulpit here to talk about the value proposition for SOF. We'd love to see more of it. I mean, I know from the media's perspective, we'd love to hear more about it, but I definitely think that he does take advantage of the opportunity to double down on the fact that SOF is not something that should be overlooked as we move into this strategic competition. It is in Soft's DNA. It's where Soft came from. And it budgets in his mind should be increasing, I think. I don't want to speak for him, but if I would, I would see that to be the place where you'd want to be doubling down, not taking away.
And really compared with the other things we're sending, I don't want to sound like I'm C-lawyering for the Soft community, but it really is a fractional amounts of money we're talking at, every dollar counts, but this is someplace where you can get actually a lot of high impact, especially because of the kind of things we're going to have to do with our allies and partners forward. Let me take you to the technological element of this, right? I mean, the show has historically been a little bit gun heavy, a little bit firearm heavy, and a little bit of kinetic heavy. Talk to us about how that is actually changing in a lot of respects, and some of the things that stood out to you as somebody who also has seen a couple of these over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is my eighth Soft week, and I saw it in its inception, or like early in the years when it was kind of a quiet gun and gear show with a few thousand attendees. And I'll tell you what, it has grown significantly. This year have over 20,000 attendees. That's up from last year at 15,000. I don't think we saw anywhere near that in the early years. Well, I know we didn't see it in the early years, but this is advanced again. While there are still some guns and some gear, it is an advanced battlefield tech expo. I mean, there's like everything is here. But when you look at where the largest vendors used to be, gun manufacturers or gear manufacturers, the largest vendors that are here are, exhibiting AI technology, uncrewed technologies, and system integrators. Those are the ones that have the largest booths on the floor. And that's indicative of where Soft is going. I'd like to make a quick note about, yesterday, former UK Minister of Defense Ben Wallace was on the podium, and he says, hey, look, all this investment they were doing in technology, we did, and some of that spilled over into Ukraine. But, once the Russians laid down hundreds of thousands of mines, all that technology kind of went out the window, and our partners in the Ukraine had to go, deal with that. So it was a kind of a sobering message that as much as you want to lean into the tech, you still have to be able to, defeat very, very, very conventional threats on the battlefield.
You mentioned something interesting, right? Because there are some folks who are going to wonder, okay, hang on a second, right? I understand AI applications when it comes, right? I mean, Frank Kendall is going to be joining us on the show tomorrow on the Air Power program, fresh off of his ride in a Vista F-16 that was driven by AI, and folks get a sense, okay, autonomous weapons, artificial intelligence key in future air combat maneuvering to give that edge to pilots, right? Because you're going to respond better and maybe smarter and even sometimes more creatively than the human can, even though he makes the case that that's a couple of years down the road. What are some of the applications, AI applications, right? Because as a general rule, folks sort of see Soft as small team, heavily armed, use it when they need it, most successful when they necessarily don't. What are the AI applications when it comes to that? Is it big data, Jason, and sort of better battlefield understanding? I mean, what are the uses of this kind of technology when you get away from the guns and the gear, as you noted?
Well, it's across the board, Vago. You of course understand that. I mean, the systems integrators are here looking at that widespread data analytics piece. There's a lot of stuff in everything down to voice recognition, analytics, as far as I've shared with you in other conversations about trust verification on intonations in people's voice, all driven by AI, all these very interesting applications for how you can use all kinds of inputs and then take AI to do the computations to come up with outputs. Some of the stuff that I thought was really interesting, though, is in the unmanned surface vehicle space. So small unmanned surface vehicles, the one that I was looking at yesterday, it's, looks like something that Super Friends Black Manta would have been kind of driving. It's this really cool thing called the Kraken, which is in a partnership with Blue Halo. It's this uncrewed USV that it is almost entirely enabled with AI, as well as its ability to be sent out to do its missions with programmed waypoints and things. It also has an ability to make some decisions when it comes to branches and sequels. Some really interesting stuff. The other really cool thing, and it's not so much an AI related thing, but I found it really jumped out at me, was wireless charging. You know, so we have all these the operators carrying a whole load of kit and three devices that need charging, or six devices that need charging, and he steps into a tactical vehicle, and as he sits down in the seat of the tactical vehicle, his devices are getting charged, or he can slap a couple of them on the back of a chair in front of him, or seat in front of him, and they can get charged. So this idea of wireless charging taken to the battlefield in tactical vehicles was really interesting to me, where I was lucky when I got in a Humvee with a heater. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think there's any trooper in history who said, wait a minute, I want to carry more batteries and a little bit less ammunition, right? Nobody's ever said that. And everything, right? I remember many years ago actually seeing a brilliant French approach to doing that. So it's really great that folks are talking about fielding that. Any last thoughts, Jason, as we wrap up?
We're seeing something really, really special here in Tampa. This has always been something that was a big expo for SOCOM. SOCOM has partnered with the Global SOF Foundation to put this show on every year. That's a great partnership, because what you're starting to see now is this professional organization for SOF that is much akin to something like AUSA or AFA, and this conference every year is growing in its impact, not only to the local community here in Florida, but, you know, to the SOF community around the globe. And I think that's something that we'll continue to see grow. And I'm certainly love talking to you, and I'm really happy with the opportunity to be here.
Jason, sorry I'm not down there with you, and certainly looking forward to spending some time down there next year, especially as the organization is making this transition and at an important time. Thanks very much. Break a leg in the meantime, and look forward to having you back on again soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Vago. Have a great day.
And it's an honor to welcome back to the program Michael Harpin, who is the competitions section chief at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the agency responsible for safeguarding America's cybersecurity, or one of the agencies responsible for safeguarding the nation's cybersecurity. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Vago. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure having you back. You joined us a couple of months ago when the President's Cup competition was getting underway. You guys now have winners. I'm sorry we couldn't have you on a week earlier when you guys announced this. But give us the download. Who won and why?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Vago. So we did wrap up the finals for the 5th annual President's Cup cybersecurity competition last week at CISA facilities in Arlington, Virginia. The President's Cup has three competitions, two individuals competition. The first individuals focuses on defensive work roles and tasks, and that was won by U.S. Army Major Nolan Miles. We were excited to see him win. He's been second or third before in previous years. He's been on teams that have qualified for the finals, but he had never won before, so it was exciting to see him win. Track B, our second individuals competition that focuses on offensive work roles and tasks, that was won by Staff Sergeant Michael Torres from the U.S. Marine Corps. A few notes here. Staff Sergeant Torres won with a perfect score. He was the only perfect score throughout the entire finals. He was also the first individual to repeat as a winner. He won the President's Cup 3 individuals track A. And Staff Sergeant Torres was also second in our Track A competition this year. So a second place finish, a first place finish. It was very impressive from him throughout the day and throughout the week. And our teams competition was won by Artificially Intelligent. That team was made up of individuals from the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force. A few notes about them. There were four winners on this team who were on the President's Cup 4 winning team. And one individual from that team has actually been on every winning team for President's Cup 5. So we'll see who he plays for next year in President's Cup 6. But very impressive across the board from our individuals and our team's winners.
Congratulations to Nolan, Michael, especially for being a multi-peat winner and then artificially intelligent. I don't know what you can say about that aside from saying that's just a terrific name and noteworthy in its own right. Michael, walk through and remind the audience why this competition is so important because, right, I mean, pretty much everything you guys do has a mission and a reason behind it. Walk us through the reason and the mission.
Yeah, well, it's an honor for CISA to put it on as it's the only cybersecurity competition that's open to the entire federal government, federal workforce, and including uniformed service members. So it's a unique opportunity for those individuals to get recognition, not only from their leadership, but also their peers. And you know, cybersecurity work in general, you don't get a lot of chances to shine. You can't really prove your defensive worthiness, but here in this in the competition, you can. And so we're really proud and honored to put the event on every year and then have them host them within CISA facilities as well to give a chance for them to see what CISA is working on, what our mission is, but also a chance for them to network amongst themselves. So it's a great opportunity. CISA is always honored to put it on. And that uniqueness of just being for the federal government is something that makes the President's Cup special.
And you guys are actually, right, trying to stretch them. So this isn't just a participation award, right? Walk us through a little bit, as much as you can discuss them, the scenarios and the ways that you're actually spurring and driving people on or teams on to try to actually help solve complex problems, right? Because you guys are always trying to step up your game. The whole organism is trying to step up its game.
Right. We develop new challenges every year. And then when we start, we start with the NICE framework. So that comes from the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, their workforce framework for cybersecurity. So what we do is we take work roles and tasks from that NICE framework when we're building the challenges. So you asked about some of the situations for track A, right? That's our defensive individuals competition. We focused on the cyber defense incident responder and the cyber defense forensic analyst. We took tasks from those and we created some challenges. You know, one was how do you recover from a ransomware attack? And then we have a grading system within our challenges that can check the state of your environment. So did you mitigate it in a way that's going to prevent reinfection from the ransomware? And that's how you would score points. You would have to examine network traffic. We create a situation with the floodgates at a dam, and you have to examine network traffic to find who's the inside user that's disclosing the 8-digit code for those floodgates. In our track B, the individual's offensive competition, we focused on the exploitation analyst and cyber operator work roles from the NICE framework. Some of those challenges we had was when you had to exploit SCADA systems on a enemy spaceship, and then you'd have to our challenge server that's checking the state of the system. It would prove if you had overheated the reactors on that enemy spaceship. And give you points for that challenge. That was one of my personal favorites of the year.
Nice touch.
And some other ones, you had to do some binary analysis on corrupted files, you know, analyzing IoT network traffic. We take a lot of different variety of topics in the cybersecurity environment to build our challenges every year.
I just have to say your note of dams is noteworthy, given some of the unfortunate activity that was recently seen that you guys helped discover and highlight as the nation tries to improve its cybersecurity and infrastructure security. You're not the right person to talk to about that. But anyway, kudos on that. Let me ask you two quick questions before we go, because we're unfortunately running short of on time. Talk to us a little bit about what you're doing to prepare for next year's competition and what windows anybody in the federal workforce should be bearing in mind, because obviously people are excited to participate and they're in it to win it.
Yeah, thanks. So we're always looking to add new elements to the competition. This year, we worked with Idaho National Labs to develop an escape room around industrial control systems. And we want to find new ways to do that next year. What are some different environments that we can put our finalists in? What are some real world situations, like you know we both touched on there with the dam and the floodgates? What are some situations that we can put within the challenges that are going to give people, you know, a chance to test out some of these news events that they hear about? And then how can we also continue to grow and recognize some of the other individuals that participate, and not just our winners? Can we recognize some individuals from other agencies that perform the top amongst their constituent, their peers, you know, award the best rookies who appear in the President's Cup? We want to give a chance to offer the recognition, not just our winners. So we're getting prepared already for the competition, President's Cup 6. And we hope we'll be out with that in January of 2025. And everybody can find more information for that on cisa.gov/President's Cup. There they can also get a link to our President's Cup practice area, where we make all challenges available for individuals to play to continue to grow their skill sets and their cybersecurity knowledge. And we'll also be posting a blog in the upcoming future, in the upcoming days, that covers our finals, more information on the winners, and putting out some information on an awards ceremony for our winners that will be hosted May 20th at the Eisenhower Executive Office Building by the Office of the National Cyber Director.
Terrific. And real quick and very brief, you guys also have an interesting conference that's coming up in Dallas, right? I mean, as part of your whole, you know, educate and improve the workforce through competition, but also through learning. Walk us through the conference that's coming up.
Yeah, we want to use the content we develop for the competition and provide some training and education opportunities, not just to the federal government, but to a wider audience. And we'll be at the NICE conference in Dallas, Texas on June 3rd, holding a workshop on how we develop the challenges, the open source applications we use, and allow the participants to play through a handful of our challenges as well.
Terrific. Congratulations to you, the CISA team, to Nolan, to Michael, and Artificially Intelligent, still an awesome name, and keep up the great work. Thanks very much again, and look forward to having you on many more times in the future.
Thank you, Vago.